Good evening, everyone. For our last Thursday Salon Dharma Talk meeting of the season, I thought about a half an hour before, I thought, we should have posted on WhatsApp that this was the last talk of the season. Maybe some people would have come. Thinking, oh, one last chance. But we didn't, and it's okay too, because the people who are here want to be here and want to hear this, and those who aren't don't want to be here for whatever reason. So, I feel like, that's kind of a conceptual idea. This is the last Dharma talk of the season, or summer. I can enter into that experience conceptually, or I can be with it non-conceptual. It's just this, just what it is. Taking into consideration the particulars of the situation and the circumstance. So it's July 11th, is it, or 10th? What is it? 10th, July 10th. So that situates us. As of next week, we won't meet on Thursdays. The temperature, the season, I can take into consideration all of those particulars without having a conceptual experience of that. And that's what our practice is really about. And something, I was thinking of an example of that. So for the weekend, for the past 4 days until Tuesday night, I was in Germany, in Hamburg, for a wedding. And I knew the people getting married, my Dharma sister Corinne and her partner, her now wife. I knew the person leading the Buddhist ceremony, my Dharma brother Frank. I knew a few other people, not many. Corinne's family, her brothers and sisters, I know, and her mother I've met. But otherwise, the other 90 people, I didn't know, mostly, and apart from a handful of people. And I don't speak German. Fortunately, because there was a mixed crowd and Corinne's family, she and her brothers grew up speaking French, but they grew up in Austria. So they speak German and French and English, and so there was a lot of different languages. Because all of these things I didn't know, it was easier to have a not if I could let go of my ideas about Germany, Hamburg, the language, the people, because I had fewer ideas about the people, about the place, about what kind of meal would be served. It was much easier to have a non-conceptual experience of it, not being attached to my ideas, not comparing or contrasting things like that. And that was quite a, you know, that was a valuable experience to be able to do that. I also had agreed to Corinne's niece, one of her nieces was organizing like a show type thing where people would offer things. And I agreed to share a poem. I didn't say I will write a poem. I said I will share a poem. I didn't know what it would be. So for weeks, I was thinking, reading poems, looking around, trying to find a poem. And then finally on Friday, I was leaving on Saturday morning for the wedding. On Friday, I said, no, none of these poems do it. I have to write one. But in order to do that, I had to let go of my ideas about writing. What is writing a poem for a wedding? I'm not usually one who like says, oh, I'm going to write a love poem, or I'm going to write this kind of poem, or for this occasion, I'll write a poem. But that's what the case was. So I had the very particulars of the circumstance, and I had to approach it non-conceptually in order to write the poem. Otherwise, it would be some kind of copy or flat, not very meaningful, heartfelt words if I was just repeating concepts or something. So again, here I was coming to the very particular circumstances of I knew Saturday at 5 o'clock there was this wedding and I would be called upon to read a poem. I knew who I was writing it for, what the occasion was, and yet I had to let go of all of that and just do it. So I had a pretty good beginning on Friday, and on the plane, on the flight, I finished a pretty good draft. But it was a mess in my notebook. And when I got then to the place where the wedding would be, we had an hour and a half to go to our rooms and change and rest and do whatever we wanted to. So in that hour and a half, I had to recopy the poem and rewrite it a little bit. And I had never read the poem out loud until I was called upon at the end of the meal to come and read the poem. And that too was a really good experience to not have any idea about it. And I still don't really have an idea about it, although I read it, it was received. I promised that I would, when I got home, I would type it and send it. So I did, and I made some revisions to it and typed it and sent it to Corinne. And because this was a non-conceptual experience, which generally with in art, that's the kind of experience that we have. Because if we come to it conceptually, it's probably not heartfelt, true, as we say. And this non-dual knowing of taking into account the circumstances and yet coming to it without a set idea or concept, allows for the truth to emerge. And there's something very true in the poem that I wrote, although I still am living it non-conceptually, so I don't really know. I can't really situate it. And I know it takes time. And maybe I never will. Maybe I'll never be able to situate it, which is probably means it's a good poem. In the sense of, it took me to a different place when I wrote it. In myself, it's not like any other poems I've ever written. So, in myself, in my process, in the circumstances, for me that means, yeah, okay, that's valuable, that's good. This is just an example from my weekend that we can look at to see in our lives how this works, how the non-conceptual approach, so non-conceptual approach to summer, non-conceptual approach to the last Dharma talk, I read recently this story that a Cree Indian, the Cree Indians in North America, a current, contemporary Cree Indian medicine man told the story of when he was a disciple. He was studying with an elder teacher, and the disciples pressed the teacher, were asking him, so what do we need to do to become awakened, enlightened? And teacher said, I'm going to read this because I want to get it right. I can't tell you where to find a buffalo, but I can tell you it's not over there. And he pointed over to like something obvious, like a gas station or something that was right there. So we can't be told where to find the non-conceptual experience of oneness or suchness or just this. But we can be told it's not over there. It's not in the conceptual realm. So it's non-conceptual. We can be told that. It's not in concepts. But we can't be told where it is, where to find it, because we can only find it ourselves. So, like I said, when I couldn't be told, I couldn't even tell myself where to find that poem that I wrote. But I did know it was not in the conceptual realm through all of my practice of, art, my art and my sitting and Dharma. I know that it's not in the conceptual realm, but I don't know where it is. So I know where it's not, but I don't know where it is. Another example from the weekend was, so after the wedding, we came to Hamburg and a friend of Corinne's let us use her apartment. So we look at the map and we situate where we are in the city. And we said, oh, we live not, we're staying not far from a canal. So Hamburg is, for the Germans, they call it the Venice of the North. It has these canals all over. It's very green. And there's a big lake in the middle of the city. And the canal, one of the main canals, leads into the lake. And we were staying near one of those canals. So I look at the map. We say, oh, let's go out Sunday afternoon and follow the, go to the canal and follow the canal to the lake and see what happens. Whatever. So we have the map on our phones and we're following it. And of course, it does look like, I mean, it is what's on the phone, but it's not anything like what's on the phone. When we're ex you're experiencing it, it's nothing like what the concept on the phone is of the map. And the distance, you can't really measure it on your phone, although it might say this little thing is 200 meters or something, but it doesn't really mean anything. And we don't know what the terrain will be like. And the phone doesn't tell you that, ah, there's work on one side of the canal, so you have to cross over the bridge and take the other side of the canal. And then how the path goes, and who the people will be there, and where you can stop and have a coffee on the, you can see, oh, there's a cafe here by the canal, but you don't really know what that place is, or what they serve, or who will be there. Or even if you want to stop there at that point, all of the, everything on the phone is conceptual. But then out there walking, totally non-conceptual. And we even had an experience the next day, Monday morning. We had no food in our flat. And on Sunday afternoon, everything in Germany is closed. Everything closes at 1 o'clock. So no grocery stores, no shops, nothing. So we had no food in our flat. We had tea. They had left us some tea. And then, so we said, oh, we'll go out for, they have all these coffee shops, a bit kind of like Dutch towns, with coffee shops, and they serve brunch and things like that. So we picked out one that was on one side of the canal, near where, on the other side of the canal from where we lived. So we follow the map and we get there, sit down, have whatever, go back to our flat, and then later in the afternoon go back out again. And we were going somewhere else, so we followed the map this time and took the other side of the canal. And then we came to a street that we had to cross where there's a bridge, and across on the other side of the bridge was the place we had been for breakfast. And because we were stuck in the conceptual realm of looking at the map, we didn't realize that we could have taken the same way we took this in the morning to the restaurant to go where we were going in the afternoon. Just all of this to say that when we're hanging on to our concepts, we have a very different experience, and we don't experience the way as it is. We experience it conceptually as it is on the map. And we discover the town differently. Now we feel like after 2.5 days in Hamburg, well, we really know Hamburg. Well, we don't. We just know a little part of Hamburg that is around the lake and the canal where we were, you know. But non-conceptually, we know those parts, those paths we walked on, those streets we walk on, the 10 kilometers we covered on Monday. We know non-conceptually. We experience that. You can look at the map and memorize the map, but it's not the same thing as walking those 10 kilometers. And the rain that came at one point. And the shop that we went into to buy an umbrella, you know, that is not on the map. Our life is not on a map. And yet we try to make it fit the map, or we try to see a map or where it will take us. But all of us sitting here know very well that our lives don't look anything like what we planned. Or we look back and we say, how did I get here? You know, how did this happen? Experientially, we know. Needs no explanation, experientially. I've read another story of an American writer who was telling a story. She's an American writer who practices Buddhism, and was telling a story that she was in psychoanalysis, and her analyst told her. Oh no, she asked her analyst, because he also practiced Buddhism, what do psychoanalysis and Buddhism have in common? And the analyst said, neither of them works. And so she said, well, so if nothing really works in the end, what's the goal? And he said, lightness, which is a way of when, you know, when we've let go of our concepts, when we've let go of the goals, when we've let go of the ideas about what we are supposed to become or achieve, when we just experience the very particulars of the circumstance, there's something light about it because we're not weighed down by all of the concepts and the comparing and contrasting, the dualities. And this writer, she doesn't. I have the feeling that, and this was an interview that I read about with her. I have the feeling that she doesn't practice Zen, that it's Tibetan Buddhism she practices, which doesn't really matter. In any case, we're, you know, maybe that lightness is another way of saying that we're most fully alive, when we're responding directly to the world, to the circumstances, to whatever it is. Not when we're responding to our assumptions and our ideas and our concepts of the world. That's when we're most alive. Responding just to this as it is now, non-conceptual. You know, like we come on the screen today, we don't know who's going to be here. If I'm like hanging on to, if I'm trying to respond to someone who's not on the screen, that it's absurd. Then I'm really missing those who are on the screen. And this moment here, together. So, this is kind of a response to the last talk of the summer and the what is summer, what is talk, because it's not actually the last talk of the summer. Every moment is a Dharma talk, as we said, I think, last week, or maybe at the day of practice. You know, everything is a Dharma talk. Everything is teaching. But in this particular circumstance of this gathering, at this link, at this time, on this day, this is the last one until September. So we acknowledge that. Some of us will be on retreat soon, and then there will be other Dharma talks. We have no idea what that will be. Who will be there? What will be said? You know, right before, when Adelian and João and I were the only ones on the screen, there was a brief discussion about, yes, we know where we'll stay, but we don't know how we're getting anywhere, whatever. You know, we organize, we plan, and yet we ultimately have to let go of all those plans and the conceptual idea of the plans in order to just fully experience whatever it is, whatever arises. I think Adelian said something like, yeah, we don't know this, but it will work out, or something like that. It will. It will work out because nothing works. So the best way to approach it, the most pure way or something, the true way to approach it is, whatever it is, it will work. Because nothing works. So maybe I will stop there and allow others to share, speak. Adayam?
You mean nothing works? Nothing works as in that sense of nothing works as planned. You mean
yes.
In the sense of, yeah, okay, because
yeah.
It seems to be working.
Right. And the thing is, so that if we set out to say, well, I'm going to make this work, or this is what my objective is, probably it won't work that way. It can't, you know, it can't work that way. Because that would be to hang on to a concept. And life is non-conceptual, you know.
I don't know, for some reason, the first thing that comes to mind, because I seem to have some things working that I sort of plan, so I'm trying to wrap my head around it. So do you mean like something, what are we talking about here? Because I don't know. For instance, my objective is to come to the retreat in Portugal or something. So I set this objective at some point in the past. And, well, we're not there yet. So let's see. But, well, as I recall, last year I had made the same plan and it worked. So how do we, you know, because the maybe what I'm getting at is, how do we, so it's a way of, so yeah, so is that the distinction you're making between like responding to something? So I don't know, I was very happy with my experience of the retreat last year. So as a response to this experience, I thought, oh, I took a note in my mind and said, ha, well, I might come back next year. Because, so is that a sort of, are we distinguishing like sort of clinging to a specific plan of the way something will happen? And on the other end of the spectrum or something, just responding in a way to circumstances or something.
Yeah, it's something like that.
Okay, but then, and then in there, so I have an intuition of that, I suppose, but how does, because there is, or maybe that's maybe conceptual and I probably need to let go of something regarding that, but there seems to, in my intuition tells me that there is something to do with responding in a sort of passive way, so as in not making any decisions, just you see what happens and then you pick and choose between the options that life or circumstances make available to you. That's already a bit conceptual. And on the other hand, like one desire, like maybe everything is pointing you in another direction, we could say, but you want this, and so you, so how does the, how could you maybe develop on the articulation between, although, yeah, I suppose we're Zen students, so this distinction between like an inner drive and an outer circumstance of something, of course, it's also conceptual probably, and but you have any thoughts on how that, what
Well,
the hell it is I'm talking about?
yeah, in this ever-changing dynamic of reality in which we live, in which we live our lives, circumstances are changing all the time. They're different from moment to moment. And we respond to them. We can, if we respond to them from a conceptual, I'm just using this word conceptual because maybe it speaks more from a or a fixed point of view. This is how I want it to be, like you said. If you say, okay, well, I want to go to Portugal and I want to fly in a private jet, and I want to stay at a beautiful villa, in the Algarve, well, that's not going to happen, or even, I'm going to fly in a private jet to go to the retreat. If you have this fixed conceptual idea of what it is, and I'm exaggerating it because we do, we have, okay, I remember what it was like last year, so I remember what it was like flying there. And although last year you flew to Porto, this time you're flying to Lisbon, I think. Maybe you flew to Lisbon last year too, I don't know. So it's different, and it's a different day, it's a different time, it's different people. Same people won't be on the plane. The plane would be a different plane. Maybe it's not even the same airline. I don't know. All of these different factors, and included in all of the particularities of the situation is us. It's not only the airplane, but it's us and what's changing in us. In the person that we think we are, our ideas about ourselves, about the others, all of that's all changing. Those are all the particulars of our lives. And often we ignore them. We don't focus on some of them. So when I talk about the lightness, it's responding to the situations rather than to our assumptions and ideas about the situation. So, you responded by saying, okay, yeah, I want to go to this retreat. You took into consideration the particularities where if you reserve your ticket many months in advance, It'll be cheaper than if you reserve it late, like us dummies did, you know. So if you and you took the into consideration that you don't have an unlimited amount of money, and so you want it to be cheaper, and so you did that. That's just responding to the circumstances and the particularities. Beyond that, you don't know. You don't know if that plane's going to be on time. You don't know if there's going to be traffic jams on the way to the airport. You're going to miss it, the flight, or I don't know, whatever it is. But you're responding to the situation as it arises. If there's traffic jam, well, then you're in the traffic jam. Or you may anticipate that. Ooh, that's a day of, you know, people are leaving on holidays in France. That trip to Marseille, it might be really crowded on the highway. So you take into consideration that circumstance. Does this make any, does that respond to your, yeah, okay.
So then, if I sort of transpose this idea to our practice as in a broader sense, sorry, it's time. In a broader sense, I don't know, I was thinking about the idea of, because why are we practicing? And if we transpose what my understanding or some of my understanding of what we just said, if you sort of do this because you want to get enlightened and you think that if you're sitting exactly this way and ringing the bell exactly this way and doing all of these or whatever, which can apply with any other kind of practice or whether it's a psychoanalysis, if I go every 3 times a week for my 30-minute appointment with my psychoanalysis with my psychoanalyst, I will understand who I am, what I went through, and I will be, in a way, enlightened as well. I suppose it's a different form of that. So my understanding of what you just explained as well is that if we get a bit too specific and too attached to detail, there are a lot of traps in there somehow. So if we sort of set a broad general direction of like, I want to go to the retreat, I don't know, like you said, I don't know what kind of plane, the plane is going to be late, who's going to be sitting next to me, etc. But just my general idea is to go there. So applied to our practice, I don't know what that would be, but it's a sort of just continue opening or whatever, something like that, I realize that this practice is I feel good about it, and I feel sort of more more open, I suppose. So I'll just continue that in a way, which is kind of broad. But then I don't know. That yes, so my point is that if you set such a broad objective, like with our practice, then I don't know, I get confused. My initially my thought was, but then if you set such a broad objective, then anything can, if you keep that sort of broad objective in mind, then anything will, if you keep that in the background somehow, anything will help, whether you're practicing, whether you're reading a book, whether you're interacting with my neighbors at the market, which is happening right now, or whether I'm sleeping. If I keep in mind, or I don't know if it's keep in mind, but if my sort of broad direction is set, then why isn't any specific direction that I choose, like whatever our practice or anything else, Isn't it in a way a form of narrowing of the spectrum of all of this, which technically is what is the support, the background that is offered to us to explore in a way. Sorry, that was
Well, the thing is that it's neither broad nor small. It's that everything is a manifestation of the universe. That is the universe. So a speck of sand, a raindrop, the ocean, a mountain, the people in the market, it's all, each and every single one is a manifestation of the universe, what we can call the universe or Buddha nature or true self or whatever. So it's that wide. It's so wide. That's why we say, the Buddha way is unsurpassable. There's nothing outside it. So yes, in that sense, it's so big. Maha. That's what Mahayana Buddhism, that's what that means. Big. Bigger than any bigness we can imagine.
But so, but what you just said also, you said that it's, but any part of it is also all of
All
it in a way. So from that perspective, whether we choose our practice or sleeping or whatever, in any case, if we fully dive into that, it sort of opens the same sort of space or whatever. But it just reminds me of, maybe you have heard this because you were listening to these lessons of what's his name? Moi de
was the mud.
Wajdi Moad. Yeah. So is this story that I heard today, I think, of this nun that he talks to, and that he remembers regularly because she has never come out of the cloître, and so he's in interacting with her for whatever reason. She never comes out of the monastery. And so he's curious, and at some point he asks her, how can she not want, or how can she limit herself from his perspective? How can she limit herself to this? And so then she starts explaining all the specifics of how this light of the sun hits the garden and the potager that she tends every single day, and this is her universe, and it's huge. In fact, it contains everything for sure.
Great. Exactly.
So yeah, he has another garden space, and I guess we all have our specific window in a way. Thank you.
Exactly that. I had forgotten about that story, but that's exactly it. And the fact is that because of her deep practice, because she has put herself, chosen to devote herself to that. She has, in a sense, that's so powerful to reduce, ourselves to just this, just this, just this, that it opens up our perspective. Our sitting practice does the same thing. Sleeping might do it. You said if we give ourselves entirely to sleeping, it might. However, chances are that it will be limiting rather than opening. Or practices that are, if we become, really proficient in drug addiction or something, well, that's probably going to not cultivate this heart and mind opening, that helps us to see just, the entire universe in that back garden. But yeah, that's a beautiful story he tells. Yeah. And there's a similar one. Well, he didn't tell it, but I remember something about one of the desert fathers, the ancient Christians who went and lived as hermits in the desert, and someone, like a wandering disciple came to see one of the hermits or something, said, how can you do without any Bible or any scriptures to study or whatever? And he said the same thing that nun said. He said, I walk out of my cave and it's all there. or in his cave too. I don't remember exactly how he phrased it, but it was that same thing. It's the same for all of us, you know, we just don't see it. But our practice is intended to help us there. You know, it's like the medicine man said, I can't tell you where to find the buffalo, but I can tell you it's not that gas station. You know, it's not there. Although it might be, you know, it might be. But it's the concept of the gas station that it's not. As long as we're hanging on to the concept of it's not in the gas station, it's not going to be in the gas station. So, good questions. Know, this the writer that I was mentioned, she said, you know, something like, we get smarter when we think collectively, and that, you know, the goal of good teaching, it's not like, you know, packaged wisdom, like I come here, you know, some Zen people, teachers, you know, they write their talk and then they sit here and they read it. Well, this seems contrary to everything that the teaching is about, right? That the, you know, the packaged wisdom or something, that's not what it's about. It's this, you know, experiential exchange that we have when we're here. In any moment, but specifically in this context. Debbie.
Roshi, what is the name of this writer?
Her name is Sarah Ruhl, Ruhl. I've never really heard of her.
No.
A playwright and poet, but I didn't really know anything much about her, but I came across this.
She's contemporary. She's now.
She is, yeah.
Okay.
So for the French speakers, you know, Vajdi Muad is really, really fascinating. I don't know. Did I tell you about him too, Adrian, or did somebody else tell you about him?
No, it was what's his name? Who mentioned it at a workshop? A
Studying with.
Saturday study group. Yeah,
Yeah, Hervé, yeah.
Hervé. Yeah, so then I checked out. Then I've been listening to more and more of them, and they're just mind blowing.
Yeah.
Wow, this is.
What's the name again?
We can
I'll send you a link.
yeah.
Thank you.
In French.
Can you send it to me also, Andrea? Adia, please. Thank you.
Lisa?
Hello, everyone. All this was, I was thinking of things work and not working and what it means. I was, it's much less, it's much more prosaic. I was supposed to be home at 8 for the Dharma talk and the sitting. I had a doctor's appointment at 6. I figured, oh, I'll be home, no problem. And got out at 7:30. So I wasn't going to make it. And had to pass by some by someone's place to give keys. And anyway, and then I thought, well, I'll sit in the park when I get there. And then I said, but I still don't have My 4G back, so I don't know if you were all frozen, but I could hear you. And then my battery was down, so I had to get home. And and if I was stuck on the idea that I was going to be home at 8, and be there fully for the last Dharma talk of the summer, then I think I would be very unhappy because that's not what happened. It didn't work the way I had planned it to. I had planned, and I was late again, and my phone was not working, so I couldn't see you properly. I could hear, but anyway, and yeah, and I guess that's also responding to the situation, and it's not working, and it is working. If I am open to it, then it's working. Not the way I wanted it to be working, but it's working. Yeah, and yeah, so that's just my very down to earth Zen story of the day, which is a simple story of our daily life. Nothing conceptual about it and grand about it. At the same time, it's very grand, because this is what just happened for me. And yeah, and that's it. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you.
This brings to mind very much the last time we were all together in Noisy with Krisha. And she was saying there was a period in her life recent last year, I don't know exactly when things were so awful she couldn't sit. And there was also a period in my life last year, which was so awful that I had to sit, but it was crappy sitting. And when she was saying that, I thought, even when it's crappy sitting, I think you should sit. Because crappy sitting is crappy sitting, but it's sitting. I mean, I can understand that there can be periods in your life which you can't sit, but the whole all through the winter when everything in my life was just so terrible, I swear, I haven't been through anything like it in quite a while. And I'd sit in the morning with everybody on Zoom, and I wasn't sitting. I was just sitting there worrying, who do I have to call and what about the door? But I was not moving, and I was with you guys. And okay, so my new position is, even if it's awful, sit. Even if it doesn't live up to my idea of what sitting should be, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Even if it's not good sitting. I often wonder, what should you wish somebody for a retreat? Have a good retreat? What is that supposed to mean? Have a great retreat. Have a peaceful retreat. Have an awful retreat. Just have a retreat. Basta. I have a very prosaic question, speaking of prosaic. Now, this information that Adrienne just put on here, what do I do with that? Do I copy it down, or I don't know what to do about this. How do I make that active in my life?
Sorry, the second one I sent, I think it's a clickable link. So you just click on it and it will open on your browser on YouTube. And then you can just pause it and play it later.
I open it now.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because otherwise the chat will disappear.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah, so if you click on it now, it should open on your browser on the side, right?
It might, Debbie, it might be the one that you already watched.
Yeah.
But it will, you'll also find the other ones in the series around there if you go to that link, probably.
Okay, but I've lost you guys. I'm really sorry. I apologize. What do I do now?
Is it open on your Google or something, or on your Chrome or Firefox or whatever you use?
Don't know how to get back to I'm out. Oh, here I am. Okay, that go. So it's on there so I can go back to it. Thank you very much. I've never known what to do. People put things up and I think, Thank you.
Okay, well, we can stop there then and chant the vows or as you like. Thank you.